Hi everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. You're very welcome to the show. I'm your host, Coach Park, and we are up on episode number 49. So today I'm joined by the excellent athletic rehab therapist called Owen Feeney, who is based in Dublin and in Wicklow, and we get a chance to talk about everything, everything and anything rehab wise. Hope you guys enjoy the show, and I'll chat to you guys very soon.
All right, folks. So welcome back. This is Coach Porrick from the Humble Coach Podcast. You're all very welcome back to the show. We are up on episode number 49 at the moment. I know a bit of a hiatus. We're getting back into it again eventually. I keep raving on about this. We'll get there eventually, lads. But I'm joined by an excellent and interesting man called Owen Feeney today to talk about all things, I suppose, it's, among other things, rehab and athletic therapy and a few different bits and pieces. But Owen, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, it's a pleasure to be on.
So Owen, could you tell the people what the deal with yourself is, where you kind of came from, and I suppose the first kind of question is how you got into being a therapist, and what kind of brought you down that road?
My qualification is an athletic therapist. Mm-hmm. And I, for years, had wanted to be some form of therapist. And it normally it had kind of spanned from the placements and the work experience that I had done when I was in secondary school. So I was kind of like, come hell or high water, I was doing some kind of degree that allowed me to do that, just to be in that industry. And I didn't do super on the leaving cert and ended up actually abroad initially. And I spent a year abroad in Budapest studying physiotherapy, and really enjoyed the course, really enjoyed the place, but it was just a bit too far away and you kind of got a bit homesick. So ended up coming back over to Ireland, and with what I had already done, I was able to transfer over into athletic therapy and training in DCU. Mm-hmm. And then I did my 4 years of undergrad there, and I then realized that I would have to very quickly become an adult and have to start have some sort of idea of what kind of therapist and what I would want to do. Mm-hmm. Be it work for myself or work for others. And in the last year, I set up my own place then in Bray. Mm-hmm. Where I moved to also in the last year.
Oh, nice. Okay, sweet. So that's interesting. And I know you're in with the lads in CSP in Bray. Yeah. You're also in another place, is it Urban Health? You kind of base yourself.
Yeah, out. Urban Health in Ranelagh. And I started in Urban Health inside Ranelagh as kind of like a pop-up clinic. Because that was actually where I was first working. At that stage, I was also still doing my part-time job that I was doing during college. Yeah. And I was a bit like, I was like, right, it's time to go. And so I actually ended up in CSP by pure chance, just because I had heard that a space had been made available inside there for a therapist, and it was free. And I contacted the guys inside the gym and said, is there any chance of me renting the space off you? And it was literally, yeah, come down this evening if you want. And it was pretty much in the space of about 3 hours, I had somehow managed to agree to rent a space and set up a clinic. And it happened all very much all of a sudden, but it so far has worked out very much in my favor, thankfully.
Excellent. Well, it always does go really fast. I think once you start the process, everything kind of flies a bit, and it's actually a little bit not a million miles away from my own sort of situation. Myself and my girlfriend are buying a house at the minute, and we started the process, and then everything just starts escalating, and we're like, oh no. What the
hell? I suddenly have a lot of obligations that need to be reached all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's a lot of adult stuff, like, tipping around. But that's excellent. That's cool. So, and like, I know the lads in CSP, the lads are excellent. And Alan and the crew down there are really, really savvy. And I think that's one of the interesting things that we'll kind of move to next. And I suppose we get stuck into the kind of nitty gritty questions soon enough. But from your experience, like, obviously, as you were in college and relatively newish to I suppose being a business owner and all of that kind of stuff. But have you found on the more training kind of side of things that there's any particular common issues that you're seeing more and more of? Be it, you know, we've kind of separated out nearly into either the regular general population, or also the actual strength and conditioning or athletics, an athlete kind of a scenario. So is there common enough themes between both? Like, is everybody just getting the same types of injury issues going on? Or are we looking at distinct changes in it because of a number of, I suppose, different parts of life that might be catching up on us all?
I think
chat about that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely divides, and you can see it by the backgrounds of people that come in. So I tend to see a very broad kind of population of people. I see people who are like desk jockeys who are literally 9 to 5 every day. They come home, they probably open up the computer and then do more work at home, and their kind of lives are revolve around work, and therefore everything else around it is sort of secondary in nature.
Yeah.
And they're normally the people who come into me and they're like, I've like debilitating back issues or neck pain and stuff like that. I've seen bigger issues from people who live sedentary lives, from people who do maybe crazy levels of contact sports, or like a lot of people that I was speaking to in the past were expecting me to be like mopping the floor with people because I work out at a CrossFit gym, and they were expecting, they were like, oh sure, they're going to all be injured. And most of the injuries that I see then from the strength and conditioning side, because there's power lifters, there's CrossFit people, there's the very classical strength and conditioning kind of background of most of what people would expect as well, they actually have most of the overuse issues or the kind of random acute injuries, mainly due to just explosive exercises. But they're more almost, I can kind of, I would nearly see more people who are just nearly just doing their work.
Yeah.
And they come in, like there's nearly more injuries as a result of people doing nothing than people doing something.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the way our populations have shifted. We have become a bit more sedentary. Mm. We have become more kind of work comes first, and then everything else revolves around work. And our kind of health as a result seems to have kind of followed suit, because everyone seems to have back issues. Everyone seems to have neck issues. Everyone seems to have sciatica. Even though I'm like, how do you even know about sciatica? And it's like, oh, I know exactly about sciatica. And you're like, fair enough. I think there's it's sort of like a strange mentality that people have, that I think people feel like if they go and do work out, if they go to gyms or if they pick up sports again, I think at a later stage in their lives, I think they feel like they're going to be more prone to injury.
Mm.
Whereas from what I've seen, it's nearly the exact opposite. You're actually less prone to pick up injuries, and you're more prone to actually recover and improve your level of health from where it was at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's quite interesting. As we become more and more technological, and also, I suppose, even like you mentioned there, there's nearly apprehension and the extremism, I think, of some sports, and CrossFit, one of those, or at least the perception of it is quite extreme. We obviously both know that it's extreme in like small little mini pockets, and the general situation is completely opposite of that. And it's a lot more normal exercising than it is heavy duty CrossFit that normally we kind of look at, we can see. But I think one of the biggest challenges, like you mentioned there, is that we have an awful lot of people who come in with some common enough sounding issues. Like it might be back pain or it might be neck pain or whatever. But all of these are quite straightforward, and I suppose not straightforward, but they're normally self-diagnosed, or at least somewhat self-diagnosed. But if not, they're also, there's not necessarily scaremongering, but there's a lack of education from the doctor's side where they would normally go from or pick up those ideas from. And then coming to yourself, they're kind of going, okay, well, look, I have this situation. And you're like, well, exactly how much do you know about the situation? But I think a lot of it comes back to looking at each individual person as an actual person, not the case of what they're currently doing, what they've the issue is, as in what actually is going on with them. If they do have significant back pain, is it because their core strength is quite weak, or their actual hip flexors are a little bit tight, and it might only be a small adjustment needed, but it might change their whole perception of it. I don't know if you could speak a little bit about that. That if there is any is there just particular areas of improvement that people, like regular people, can make that are going to hopefully help with some of their generic back pain and such? Do you see more common themes in the particular areas that they're getting caught up in?
I would say, yeah, definitely. In relation to what you said about the fear mongering, I feel like as we have become more technologically advanced, Dr. Google seems to kind of play a big role in people's perception and understanding of healthcare. And that's not a bad thing, because we went from sort of a population where only doctors and only specific therapists understood what an injury was, whereas now everyone kind of has the ability to go off and learn about the kind of problems that say their symptoms, and they can look it up. But the problem is that there's this vague nature to injuries that I could give you the symptoms right now, and I could give you probably 6 or 7 different injuries that could be causing it. And the problem is people seem to jump to the worst of the list, because especially when it comes to back pain, because every single person that seems to come in mentions discs, I think, and that's the fear side. I think people feel like, oh, is it a disc? Oh, is it, is it a slip disc, or is it some kind of a avulsion of the disc? And you're like, well, no. I'd rather go from the kind of low level before we get to that part. Mm-hmm. But I think that's definitely, but that is an education thing as well, because as much as people are able to find out what is going on, or they might, or at least they perceive that they're learning about it online, there's this, because of the vagueness of it, you're going to be given a very vague answer then, and then most people will just put it underneath a broad termed issue. I feel like there is sort of fear mongering going on, and like you were saying about the doctor's side of it, sometimes people aren't given that amount of information that they probably should be given when it comes to their injuries. And it's not necessarily the doctor's jobs to, like, a doctor is going to send a patient to me to get a concrete answer, or at least be put in the right direction when it comes to like a musculoskeletal injury. You know, I'm more than likely going to be the one that's able to kind of determine from what symptoms that they've told me that, oh yeah, well, that's disc, or that's a facet joint, or this is SIJ, or this is just QL tightness, or this is some issue regarding your hips, or something like that. But the problem is, I think people are worried then because they're not given a definitive answer. And then when they come to you, they're a bit like, oh, is that all it is? And you're like, yes. And it's like, if you then improve your level of activity and use your body the way it's supposed to, you're not going to be getting these kinds of injuries or these types of pains. So I think the sedentary side is also that we're not using our bodies the way they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. So our bodies are inherently lazy. As amazing as they are, they're very inherently lazy. And they will just push off all the forces to a tissue or an area of our body that's not designed to deal with that kind of stuff. And then we suffer for it in the long term.
Mm. And I think that's a nice insight. But that's where my next question is going to go. When you look at people coming in that, and potentially the majority of your clients, like you mentioned there, would be, or at least a lot of them, are sedentary people who are just working at regular desk jobs or whatever it is. But they also might just be exploring certain events at the weekend, a 5K or a Spartan run or whatever it is. But the alternative then, I suppose, and you'll be aware of this as well, is you'll have the opposite end who are heavy-duty triathletes or kind of lunatic CrossFit heads that are just mad for competition and just want to train all the time. And you have the other end of those kind of sequences or situations. The difficulty you'll have, I think, with that is that you'll have not necessarily a hypochondriac scenario, but you'll definitely have a much more sensitive person who doesn't have that education or that confidence in their body that they can kind of, they can dig into a lot of activities and kind of be okay with it. They're like, look, I'm robust enough. I can handle it. I can get away with this kind of stuff. And you know what? It's just, it's a normal thing that there's a bit of rough and tumble within it. Whereas if you're not used to that, and if you, especially if you've been definitely conditioned out of it with the same routine, consistent, sedentary kind of a job or a commute to work or whatever it is, you get stuck in those same patterns over and over and over. So I don't know if you can speak a little bit about your recommendations for those kind of people. Is one of your first recommendations, even if there is a significant enough injury, is it building back in just movement and just activity in general of a varied enough nature to try and really find out where the actual issue is going on?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of tough because sometimes it's like you were saying it before as well. It's like every person is, you have to treat them like an individual, like regardless of even their level of activity or what activities they are. Because I when it comes to general population, I would like, my biggest advice is normally doing that varied level of activity in like, other than they're just the rehab, trying to get them to do some base level of strength and conditioning, getting them to do some base level of cardio, because their bodies just aren't used to it. And to be able to have at least the foundation of both strength and conditioning and cardio health means that, other than just the fact that people's metabolisms will increase their like levels of healing, it'll just mean that robustness, like you were talking about, for most of the people who are just going through the kind of consistency and they're just going through their cycles of, this is the same thing that they do day in and day out, their bodies aren't exactly being tested. So when these kind of issues comes up, they seem to be the ones that suffer the most. They don't have that kind of nearly that safety net that then the kind of heavy duty, you know, like the CrossFit heads, the people who are, you know, live, breathe and die for it, they seem to be able to just suck up these kind of injuries and move along. And they're the other, say, like, if it was like the worst kind of people to have to kind of manage, they're both the same coin, just the other side of it. Yeah. So for the people who are just general population, you have to nearly like push them along really hard to try and get them to just kind of come to a normal level of activity and fitness and strength, so that their all their rehab actually means anything. Whereas for the CrossFit heads or the people who are like doing a marathon a week or something like that, or people who are doing triathlons or Ironmans or anything, these are people who are in their sport. You know, their whole social circle is probably in their activity. So for them, it's almost like you're having to put a rope around them and to get them to drag it back a level. Because even just from experience, like I think the CrossFit Games, they were on about 2 months ago, and in the gym, there was a load of people who would just be at the lower levels who were going through it because they wanted to do it for their own personal, just to do it for themselves, mm-hmm. like so that they could get a score and be like, yeah, I'm happy with that. But the other side of it is these people who, prior to the games, I knew were carrying injuries and had come to me about it. And they were like, look, I'm going to come back to you in 4 weeks when the games are done. And you're like, but it's like, you don't know what the exercise or the tempo is going to be until the day before. So they're like, look, whatever comes up, it doesn't matter. I'll push through. I'll take some Diphene. I'll strap it up and I'll be back to you in a few weeks. And you're like, no, you can't be doing that. Like, but that's the other side of things. And it's tough because if it was general population variety and just pushing them along to try and get them to, in almost a weird way, I'm trying to get them both to the same place, but by doing different things. I'm trying to speed these people up and I'm trying to slow these people down, because the people who are going too fast are sort of grinding themselves out, but they've already got this level of fitness and strength, so they'll survive it. But they're also the people who will then get the long-lasting chronic problems that can at times almost stop them from even being able to do the sport or do the kind of fitness things that they want to do.
Yeah.
So the general population people don't need to worry about that. The people who are like addicted to their activity they have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Or at least I have to worry about that for them.
I think that's an interesting
in a way.
Yeah, no. It's brought me, it's just given me an idea now. Like, I suppose, and this is one thing that I would see quite regularly, I suppose, and you'll no doubt see the same kind of thing, especially in the likes of CSP. When you have somebody who starts and gets into CrossFit or functional fitness or even a particular sport, especially at a very young age, but even at a 20s or 30s kind of age, if you take up tennis, you take up soccer, five-a-side or whatever it is, it's likely that you'll have some level of aptitude if you're going to be getting better at it. So you have some basic ability and you have some practice, you have some history with it. Whereas that's where a lot of people who may be coming from much more of a sedentary background just go for the most straightforward, non-complicated type of sports or type of activity. So it's running, it's swimming, it's just cycling, it's just maybe GA or something like that, which they just know that they can do the same kind of activities over and over and over. But that's where I find it interesting that in the likes of, say, CrossFit, for example, I'm normally more worried about somebody who comes in and gets started and has great flexibility, but not a huge amount of actual strength in general. Like, they just have huge joint laxity. They have the ability to get into these amazing squats or amazing overhead positions, but they need nearly more care than the actual wound up person who you're not going to be able to make a huge amount of change with it within a short period of time anyways. But those people are going to turn into those heavy advocates of the type of activity, and they're going to be in all the time. They're going to be like, look, I'm making hay on this. This is great. Da da da. Whereas someone who might have poor overhead mobility, like, can't play a lot of the game because their overhead squats are not there, or their snatches aren't there. So I like to kind of use the silly analogy, nearly like a video game where there's just certain levels you don't have enough coins for, like, you can't get into those levels. But I think that's why I find it's interesting that I would be definitely more conscious of that, and I'm sure you'd see maybe more of that there's certain injuries that will kick around more because those people might have underlying either they haven't done an awful lot before, so they actually haven't built up any level of strength. They just have flexibility for days. Or on the other hand of it, they just have a huge amount of strength, but not an awful lot of wiggle room for actual flexibility. So they're on the knife edge a lot of the time. But it's a difficult one, I think, yeah, trying to slow those kind of people down. That's a really difficult situation to do.
Because the people who are sent, they almost look like they're gifted in the way that they're able to just do, like, they could pick up a racket, they could pick up a hurl, they could walk into a gym. And almost just because of the fact that their bodies are able to do pretty much anything, they're sort of like, they pick it up and they run with it. Like, that is their new thing.
Exactly.
And the biggest issue I think I have, like when I see, like when I look at athletes and I look at people in the gym, I look at them, I think, similarly to what a trainer would look at them, but my mind, my other side of my mind is, wouldn't be too happy about that now. But like, I don't want to at the same time stop them from doing it, because, you know, there's going to be safety nets there, you know, especially in CrossFit gyms, because you're going to be having somebody looking at you while you go through it. It's not just going into, say, a normal gym where you sort of are the only person there and you're kind of learning as you go. I think, but at the same time with the CrossFit stuff, when you have somebody who's essentially just able to do it from the beginning, I'm always just worried that, like, when they do that first clean and jerk or they do that first snatch, because they've got that extra range, that they'll suddenly decide to throw up an extra 15 kg. And I'm like, oh, you're going to be in to see me in a few days, kind of. And it's just one of those things that I think, at least with the people who are excessively strong but don't have that range, I don't need to worry about them hyperextending their shoulders or their elbows when they're in a snatch position or something like that.
Whereas
you would have to, for the people who seem to be amazing and able to do whatever they want to, essentially.
Exactly. But I think, like you mentioned earlier on, and I kind of bring this in another direction, and you recently were working in one of the tent sets at Wellfest, am I right?
I was, yeah.
Nice. And I think it was the healing tent. Like, I didn't get up there now. We were away, but I was up there, I think it was last year, maybe the year before we were up there. Like, a fantastic event, Wellfest. It's excellent. But you were in the healing tent. So I think one of the biggest things, and you'll probably be able to speak about this in a second, is, and like you mentioned earlier on, it's the actual education of everybody and anybody. So what you'll get with the likes of Wellfest or those kind of events is, you'll get a huge amount of people that are just enthusiasts in general about activity. Or also, they just like the social media coolness kind of festival kind of vibe. And they may not be into fitness at all or into any kind of sport. They're like, look, I just want to get the photos. And I just want to get all the nice free gear and all this kind of stuff. Which probably are the kind of people that we need to be actually talking to a lot more and getting into their heads a little bit more. Because you're still going to have the crazies all the time. Like, you're always going to have those headers that want to do more and more and more in any activity, be it CrossFit or triathlon or flipping unicycling, whatever it is. But could you speak about your experience at Wellfest and how you found, do you think it makes a big difference for that amount of exposure of speaking about this kind of a thing, like a healing mentality, and also just a more patient mentality towards our own bodies and what we can achieve with
them? Yeah, I think it definitely, like this year, like the healing zone and the healing area that we were in, it was a brand new concept. It hadn't had it in other years, and it was more so just, this is going to be the trial period. So we're going to throw loads of different things in together. Be the kind of therapist in nature, kind of, you know, more rehab based, or be the somewhat more holistic in nature. And it was sort of like a mixed match altogether. So it was kind of cool. It was something that you probably wouldn't have seen in even other health events either. But I think Well, Wellfest kind of is a strange one because it brings such a mismatch of people who are quite literally the kind of poster boys of their industry.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you've just got people who bought a ticket because they liked the look of it.
Yeah.
So it was very much like you had people who had never even thought about, like, say, in rehab, in relation to rehab, mm-hmm. you had never had any, you had people who had never even considered going to rehab in if they had ever gotten hurt before.
Yeah.
And on the other side of it, you had people who were so used to going to rehab that they were quite literally doing their own rehab. They were like, yeah, look, I've done this before. I like, this isn't my first rodeo kind of thing. I know what's going on.
Yeah.
But but at the same time, you also had this real, like you were saying with the education, you had a very kind of different age group in there. And the older people that came to me, or the people who you used to play sports, or who were once quite fit and very active, and like they'd picked up maybe yoga or something along the way, or other kind of fitness-based activities like that, that would at the same time push their body, but say yoga in comparison to like a rugby game. So I had a lot of people who were coming into me and they were like, yeah, I've got this issue. And it's like, oh, how long have you had it for? And they were like, 10 years. And you're like, right. It's like, and you're just trying to go through it with them. You're like, I do an awful lot of yoga. And I was like, sadly, that's not going to fix this.
Yeah.
And I was like, as good as yoga is, it does help with a lot of issues.
Mm.
It's not a cure-all. So there's one of these, it's sort of like, I think people need to start getting more comfortable with taking parts from different activities or different backgrounds and putting them together to try and get the best effect. But I think at the moment we're going through this period in the health and fitness industry and in the rehab industry where everyone is very much advocating their way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And very much being like, this is the best way to do things.
Yeah.
Instead of just being like, oh, well, you should do this, this, and this from yoga. You should do this, this, and this from strength and conditioning. We'll add in these kind of rehab exercises for maintenance. And then you should have a word with somebody else just in case you're ever worried about your nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Wellfest is probably the perfect place for it because we need to start looking at healthcare as nearly a whole spectrum thing instead of people just being like, I'm better than you, you should come to me. And that's the kind of social media thing because everyone wants to be a cool social media, you know, a person. They want to be like, look, I've got 10,000 followers. I'm, you know, I clearly know what I'm talking about. And I was like, okay, but just don't be misleading people. And I think that's the point we're reaching now with social media and healthcare, that people need to be careful about what they're putting out there.
Mm.
People need to be careful not to be misleading people because, you know, like at the same time, it's not their job to ensure these people, you know, put one and one together and realize that they can't do this level of activity.
Yeah.
To get a six pack just because the person who's on the social media does have the six pack, they more than likely are doing that for maintenance work because they've done so many years of this and it's not going to happen over a fortnight for these people.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the same and I think there's now this big massive wave of rehab based social media and you can see it, it's kind of washing through stuff like Twitter and Instagram and places where like therapists did not exist before, you know, like you didn't used to have a famous therapist. Do you think these people did not exist in social media, you know? But I think in the last few years, as it's become a way to educate people and also to just get people interested in what you do, like I get people contacting me through Instagram to make a booking. Mm-hmm. So Instagram for me is great because I get clients coming to me and asking me, oh, can I see you about this? And like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's sure, that 100%. Mm-hmm. But I then will put up information about very specific issues or scenarios. And the problem is I need to be careful then that like I don't have people thinking this is for everyone.
Yeah.
Or it's like it's almost like you have to be you have to butt your tongue at times and be like, no, this is for this group of people. This is not for you. Don't worry about that. You don't need to look at this sort of thing. And I think it's tricky because social media, I suppose, has very much taken over. So what people see and read on social media is almost taken for a gold standard nowadays.
Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, there's a couple of interesting pieces to that. And for me, and a couple of things in particular resonated there. The first one would be the allocation, I suppose nearly what you would, I find it interesting, but you'd be influenced most by the four or five people around you potentially, or realistic situation. So whoever you're close to, you spend the most time with, you're going to get influenced by them. And I think the same should potentially happen. And we need to start trying to build this more and more is rather than just me would say, for example, being your only coach and giving you all the information all the time, all you're going to hear then is just the one voice, and you're not going to be able to have a broader awareness of, okay, well, this actually does integrate into this. This integrates into this. Why? How is my nutrition affecting this? How is this affecting this? And I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't believe that any one person or any like, unless you're a spectacular coach, that you have all of those abilities, all of those superpowers. Like I'm an amazing nutrition person, I'm an amazing S&C person, I'm an amazing prehab or rehab person. I don't know an awful lot of those people.
I think at the moment there's this thing where like everyone it's not just that everyone's a coach now. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a kind of qualification or to some standard of, but it's more like what you specialize in. Like I'm a specialist in musculoskeletal injuries. Mm. I have a background in to strength and conditioning too.
Yeah.
And then I have a module of nutrition that I did in college. Mm. I'm not gonna give people nutrition advice unless it's very glaringly obvious. And at the same time, I would still be more comfortable with them going to someone who I would be confident could give them the answers. Mm. So I think it's more like if you know it's not your remit and not your sort of forte, don't be too big a person to be like, you should go see this person.
Mm. No, absolutely. But that's actually exactly it. I'm looking at it as in, and I'm thinking even for myself, I need to start broadening my awareness of who do I want to go, like if I'm going to get nutrition advice, I want to go to somebody who has a significant ability to improve my nutrition, and be it from a behavioral standpoint or an actual logistics standpoint or whatever it is. But the same with the likes of yourself. If you're a musculoskeletal or you are a nerve or whatever it is, kind of a person, like a specialist. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges is getting people to be okay with having that two or three people or three or four people that they have in their network as their individual nearly coaches. So I think that's one of the biggest things that separates normal active people from teams, which we'd see a lot more of, or a lot more strength conditioning kind of an emphasis, where in a particular club, we'd say, for example, any club, your physio, your medical team, your selectors and your manager and your doctors are all having this conversation at different times. They're all just, and I suppose at a more professional level, and in particular professional teams or country teams or whatever it is, they're able to link all of those things together. But normal Joe Soap here isn't able to, or doesn't really have the awareness that they can do that. And it's nearly better for them than just going, look, can you give me 10 PT sessions now? I just need to get my ass handed to me and get back into it. Or do you know what? I'm just going to go to yoga for a few months and it'll hopefully just go away kind of thing. Like yeah. Most people need more of a push, but I think it might help a lot more people if they allow themselves to not get forced to kind of go, oh, I need to know all of this thing in the one packet. It's like, no, you're going to have to be exploratory about where the issues lie and how it can link up. But also on your second point there, social media is a fantastic help, absolutely. But you hit the nail on the head there, as in it needs to be appropriate advice rather than just like, look, I'm going to throw out random advice and just to make sure that everyone's okay with it, because everyone's perception of it is going to be very different. If I have a back issue and somebody else has a neck issue, somebody else has a foot issue, I'm going to look at a particular piece of that, or I'm going to take certain words from your post or whatever it is that are going to affect me or that are going to resonate with me, even if they're not the exact ones. If I'm at a very anxious, challenged position, I'm going to be very anxious about those kind of things. So there is a huge amount of difficulty with the appropriateness of the message that people are trying to put out. But I think you're right. It is interesting to see so many therapists and so much rehab of a vibe coming across it. But I think that happens with all of it. Like CrossFit is going through the same at certain points of the last few years. It'll all come back around. Like there's now everything now is about the art of coaching and the importance of that, which I completely respect, but it can't just all be behavioral type elements. It's like, no, you need to get underneath the damn barbell. You need to do it correctly. You need to have this particular movement position. Yeah. Like there's no way around this kind of stuff. You can't be airy fairy and around it. That's some of the more interesting stuff. Owen, have you got any particular recommendations for your general population? Is it going back to that straightforward, just get as much general activity as you can at a healthy level to try and maintain those things? Or is it like, look, build an actual network of people that you really need to find out exactly what's going on with you, and just rather than self-diagnose, get those opinions and then be able to form a really strong idea of where you're at injury-wise?
I think for the moment, at the moment, I think we're starting to get into a new type of healthcare. So I think everyone's far more open to having these people be their connections. And I think not be overly worried about like, look, I can't handle this. I think that's the way we're starting to go now. Like I have people who are other therapists, other physios, other PTs, or other people who have maybe they have they've done S&C and they've now done nutrition. So if I've managed to build up a rapport with them, like I can be like confidently tell this person, look, this go to this person. I have very good confidence in like their ability to give you what you need. And what I would love to be able to say to people is, look, just I know like it would be great if people could go to therapists and that network was built already. Mm-hmm. So that like if a patient comes to me, they're like, you can go to them for your nutrition, you can go to them for your strength and conditioning, you can go to them if you feel like your mobility or there's some underlying issue, and then obviously then you're kind of hoping that they themselves have their own GP and that the whole thing works and knits together nice and tightly. Because realistically, I think you're right, I think people do need to branch out. I think looking at one therapist or one healthcare provider and expecting everything from them will only get you so far. And that is because, you know, I don't have 5 degrees. I don't have a Bachelor of Science, a Master's, a Doctorate, and about 5 diplomas to be able to give to people what a well-established network would be able to give them. And now there are people out there who have that level of education, but they are also the people that are often managing Olympic level athletes and who are seen as, you know, Jesus walks on water as today kind of thing. Yeah. And at the moment, I think networking and having that built for people is the best way to go about it. Mm-hmm. But if you are just in the general population, I think it's best for people to go from one to the other, be able to be confident enough and not feel strange that you're going to, say, a nutritionist while you're going to an AT or a physio or going to some other things. Because I, in my opinion, I do think people need to be more active even while injured. Because my opinion on being injured is be active, do different types of activities, just stay away from things that cause you pain. So if you have an arm injury, a shoulder injury, and you also are in the gym the whole time, that's perfectly fine. Do things that you in the gym that won't hurt those areas. Go do leg work, go do cardio, go do core workout, do things that will still keep you active.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because people will also be driven crazy by their injuries.
Well, yeah.
But it'll also keep your metabolism and your body ticking over. Because once you stop that, and I'm not the type of therapist that will tell people, yeah, 4 weeks on the couch, we'll see you back then kind of thing. I believe that trying to be as active as possible, both using your brain and kind of being as logical as possible to kind of formulate some kind of plan around your injury is the best way of approaching it.
I think that's an interesting one, though, that a lot of the time what you'll find is, and this I've encountered myself, and it's quite challenging. If you have somebody who's injured, they normally want, I suppose, specific things to work on. They want their, we'll say something like an ACL injury or something like that, which might have a general enough timeline or a relatively general recognized timeline of recovery and return to play or whatever it is. But the temptation can be for people, be it an athlete or a general person, and I think most general population people and regular people find it nearly more difficult that they don't have that they have to build their own toolbox of, be it self-myofascial work or an actual stretching routine or whatever, because they a lot of the time will assume that the physio or the AT we'll just turn around and go, okay, look, this exercise, do those 5 times a day, dun, 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 10 reps, and magic. We'll see you in 4 weeks kind of thing. Like you mentioned there, it's like, okay, well, just sit around and wait for it to kind of heal. And you're like, well, the healing process has to be fed and nourished by the actual activity, but also by the empowerment of the person actually making sure that they can help themselves within it. And that's what I suppose it should be about, is the actual healing isn't me putting a bandage over it or an AT or whatever it is putting a bandage over it. It's an identification like, okay, this is a significant issue, but now you're going to be a vital part, or the person who's injured is a vital part of the actual recovery. And I think that's one thing that I've definitely found even more challenging, because I'm so used to prescribing things to people in a class environment or in the gym environment or whatever it is, programming mentality, that when you're starting to talk to yourself about it, you're like, oh, I should be able to just have this plan and this plan and this plan. But it's kind of difficult. And I think that's one thing that people need to be probably a little bit less hard on themselves and be a little bit more exploratory about some of those kind of elements. I don't know if you can speak a little bit about that.
No, that's definitely true. And especially on something like ACL. ACL seems to be like the archetype for people feeling like they need to have concrete plans or concrete dates of, I'll be back squatting within this date, I'll be doing this, that or the other. And I think people need to realize that it like plans and dates of recovery, and this is coming from a therapist, are beautiful things, but they are also really, really dependent on so many things and mainly on the patient themselves, that just I can throw all the rehab in the world at someone, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that they're going to heal quicker. It doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, meet these goals on specific dates. It's very much, it's based off so much stuff it's true. Like the patient themselves or a client themselves ends up becoming this integral part of the whole rehab phase. It's not just, I'm going to do these exercises and then my therapist will make me better kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and speaking from someone who is about to get ACL surgery in a week's time, I have these, my own plans in my head, and now they might work out the way that I planned them to work out, but it's about trial and error for these things. You can't let yourself become just disappointed and upset if things don't go exactly to the schedule. Like when I have my surgery, I'm getting a hamstring graft. Hamstring grafts normally mean that the quality of the graft in your knee is better quality, but it also normally means that there's more rehab because you're not getting the graft from your knee. There's this saving grace when you get a patellar tendinopathy graft. It means that you're doing the exact same basic level rehab for the first couple of weeks. So it's like you're killing two birds with one stone. Yeah. So I'm probably going to have a longer rehab than most other people might if they had their graft from their knee. Mm. But I still intend to be back in the gym in 3 weeks' time doing upper body work. Yeah. Now, I'm going to be forcing my girlfriend to help me do it, but I'm sure she will be happy to help me. So it's one of those things that I intend to be active, or as active as my body will allow me, but within constraints. I plan to do loads of trial and error, and I know that the atypical timeline given to people is 6 months for ACL. Now, but the thing is, it can sometimes be 4 months. Like you say, people who are athletes and they've done an ACL and they seem to come back in 4 months' time, they make a miraculous comeback. But these are also the people who have full teams, who literally have everything down to people's sleeping patterns, down to a specific number for them. This is not the case for general public. That 6 months can become 9 months because of complications, because of the ability to be active in themselves, or even the ability to see a therapist that often. And it's true that I think people need to be, they need to cut themselves slack. Things are not fine. Things are not definitive in nature. They're not set in stone. Even rehab itself, which is taught like it's set in stone, is not set in stone. And you see that when you come out of college, you realize, look, these facts and figures, as much as they're lovely guidelines, are not true to nature. They are not true to each person, and each person needs to be able to do those trial and errors, see what works for them, see what is best for them, for their healing, for their run back into activity, and to be able to at the same time look for that expert advice and expect like a no bullshit answer realistically. If I go to any kind of therapist, I don't want them to be telling me that I'm going to be skipping down the road in 6-7 weeks times. Like the thing with most of those kind of injuries or any kind of injuries, the pain will often go before you're actually back to normal in a funny way. If there'll be no pain, but I mightn't be able to do what I once did. Rehab can take a long time. And I think people just need to cut themselves that extra bit of slack.
Yeah.
Because it's not concrete, it's not set in stone. But people need to be able to try a lot of different things when they are coming back in. And that's the same for any rehab, be it a high level thing when you're coming back post op, be it the run into the surgery for prehab, or be it just any kind of injury. I think people need to but themselves that extra slack, which seems to at times not be there.
But I think that's an interesting point, because I think, and obviously with the complexity of any activity that you're doing, like if you're just doing, say we have someone who does 5Ks all the time and they do have an ACL issue going on, then it becomes a straightforward enough one. If they're just running on the track all the time and they know the exact same track that they're going to go with, then fine, they might have a little bit more scope for the more particular details of dates and things like that, but still having the caveat that, like, look, lots of life things can happen, so that's going to mess with my vibe on that and my progress points. But I think it can be challenging that I think a lot of the time athletes, be it in what may look like an innocuous enough or straightforward kind of a sport, something like GEA or something like that, it can look on the general point as a straightforward enough, like it's a kicking game, there's a lot of running, and then there's a lot of hand passing or something like that, fine. But I think there's also, like, nearly a depending on the players, but the lack of awareness that it is a heavy duty contact sport. It's essentially to a small extent rugby or American football, but without any support or any extra shields or anything like that. And if you're playing it at quite a high level, there needs to nearly be more sensitivity to the difficulty and the lack of actual concrete steps to get to the end point of it. And the more like the likes of CrossFit, for example, the more complicated of a sport, the more you're going to be asked different questions of it, the more and more you need to build a better robust mentality towards, no, I'm just going to be patient about how I can approach this. I get as much help as I can, but not be too hard on myself. If I don't get back to doing amazing pull-ups or amazing heavy squats or whatever it is, I think that can be the most difficult part, is because you'll have those very driven people who are really interested in getting as much done as possible and want to stay as active as possible, but they might just kind of feel but it's an emotional battle, I think, as always, anyways, that if you're coming back from an injury, you're going to have a lot of voices in your head, be it managers of teams or friends or family or whatever it is. You should be able to get this and that, and then you're putting pressure on yourself if you were performing at a quite a high level or whatever before. I think you're absolutely right, and just giving yourself a bit of slack. I'm going to take that advice, actually. Thank you very much, Owen. Give myself a bit of slack for my own shoulder injuries and stuff like that. And you just kind of you beat yourself up a little bit about it, because you're like, look, I should be able to do this and this and this. And like, should is it, like, unless you are okay with where you're at, you're not going to be, you can't get anywhere else. You have to be, you have to find that nice stable point before you can move forwards. Absolutely.
Because I think, just from my experience, like, I've told people who are at, like, real base level, senior level rugby, but it would be Division 4, that, look, you'll be out for the rest of the year. And because rugby was kind of such a social aspect of their lives, they took it quite heavy. Yeah. I've talked to people then who are, like, you're talking about Sigerson football, who, and also probably also county level footballers, and I've been like, look, you know, you're after doing your ACL, and they're like, grand, I'll get on to the surgeon, we'll get it done within 2 or 3 weeks. And you're like, I think it's very much dependent on how much it almost means to you, in a funny way. Because to some people, their sport or their level of activity, depending on how much of their own character or how much of their own lives they put onto it, it ends up kind of almost being like, this is how they see themselves. And when the more professional you are, unless it's like a career-ending injury, it's just another cog in the machine, and the machine will keep turning. These people will keep working at a professional level. And when you talk to people and you're like, look, you can't play this ever again, some people at a lower level, like, take it very badly. They they can take it really well. But most, unless you meet like an Olympic level athlete and it is literally their income, or a professional level athlete where it is literally that is their means of life, of living, it's very much more their character and their own personality upon which what their physical activity means to them, and how much their own social life revolves around it is almost dependent on, I think, sometimes how they'll take it. Because I have people who are CrossFitters and they feel like every time they walk into the gym, this is the CrossFit Games. And if I told them they were to take time off, it would mean the end of the world. But then I have people who probably are trying to get times for the CrossFit Games to see if they can qualify for it. And if they know that in the long term, doing it now will mean that they do better in the future, it's almost like they put one and one together and it's like, yeah, that's fine. So it is that kind of, I think people don't understand how almost mentally draining it's almost like mental chess for some people, that like trying to figure them out, that this is going to be hard for them, or this is going to be like a walk in the park for them. Because I think I've retired from rugby at 3 times at this stage in my life. Yeah. And I think the first time it happened, I was like, no, I'm coming back. The second time it happened, I was like distraught. I was in bits, nearly like flights of tears. And I was only playing college level rugby. And then I think I just decided it after this injury recently. And I was like, ah, screw it. And that is the different levels of where I was mentally revolving around my sport at that given point in time.
Yeah.
And
but I think that's actually a really interesting point on, because something else came into my head there, and I think a lot of it comes back to how positive of a relationship you have with that whatever activity is you're doing. And if you have sometimes you'll have obviously people that who, if they get wrapped up in a particular event or a particular type of activity or whatever it is, then they might go to the kind of dark end of it. Like they become extremists and they're like, look, I'm very much on the, this is the only thing that's in my head. And you need to have, at a high level, you need to have that, that very focused thinking, absolutely, and very, very strong mentality to it. But I'm not as convinced, because I'm very aware that it's not the healthiest scenario for long-term general health. But I think that's where that, and I'll speak a little, we'll talk a little bit about now if we can, is the importance of building that resilience and that robustness and that broad range of abilities in younger people. So that when you do come to a certain age, be it 30 or 20 or 30 or 40 odd, and you come out of it the other end, you have a significant amount of experience in lots of different things. Like, if I'm just only running all the time when I'm younger, by the time I get to like whatever 10 to 15 or something like that, by the time I get to 16 or 17, I'm just conscious if I'm not really really assisted in my support structure or physios or training or whatever. I'm likely then to have to go to a physio and be like, geez, I don't know, like this is the only thing I can do. Like, what am I supposed to do here? Obviously with the likes of yourself, myself, like we've played so many different sports and I think there was a certain point for myself, especially where I was like, look, I'm not playing this sport anymore. Oh, okay. No problem. I'll find another one. Okay. And I can move on. But a lot of people are like, well, what the hell do I do with my flipping life? Like, you know, what am I doing here? But I think that's where, as long as they're positive about them rather than the sport is dictating me, it's like, well, no, I'm playing the sport, or I'm actually participating in this, and it's up to me how much I enjoy this or what I can do about it and my thoughts towards it. I think a lot of the time that can be a real deal breaker for people, because they might have that self-confidence issues going on that might be wrapped up in a particular activity. And then when they hear a particular diagnosis, they're like, Jesus Christ, what am I supposed to do here now? Like, and they don't immediately go into solution mode. They go into panic mode. And I think that's where the vital point is, going into solution mode as soon as possible and just being patient with the whole thing, you know.
No, I would definitely agree with that, because I suppose I think it's more like what sport was, and I think what people are trying to make sports into now, that like you know, back in the day, like sports was, you know, you're going for number one. That's it, like that's the mentality that you chase. Like, if you're not first, you're last, kind of thing. And I think that kind of, like, I think sports in general kind of goes in circles, and our mentality seems to follow suit afterwards. Whereas now with kids, we try and teach them, look, at this level, competing in it is the best possible thing. Yeah. And then but at the same time, you've got, especially dads, from what I've seen, who would have been a bit more old school, and they're a bit like, mind that nonsense.
Yeah.
Look, if you're not winning, you're losing, kind of thing. Mm. And you're kind of looking at them just being like, calm down, they're only 10.
Yeah.
And I definitely think that the mental, it's such a mental thing, and it helps develop people. Like, sport, I don't think people understand the importance of sports. And I'm saying sports as an example, because obviously not everyone in the world is very like sports driven or sports oriented, but a large number of the population would be, especially when they're younger. And I think people don't understand that, like, for them at that age, sports can literally mean the world.
Oh yeah.
And to take that away from them is like taking away a part of their identity. And for many people, that is heart-wrenching stuff. Mm. And for a lot of the time now, obviously, they're trying to kind of get that competitive nature at a later point every time. Even just what other things that they've done in their lives, like back in maybe 10 years ago, especially in something like rugby in Ireland, you were a rugby player. As like, you know, you probably... maybe I had a part-time job, you worked, but then the academy structure came in. Now, this is probably more than 10 years ago, but I feel like it was only 2000 a few years ago. So
exactly, me too.
Yeah, it's just starting to show my age now. But I think once the academy structure in a lot of these things kind of actually became more about also the quality of life for a lot of these athletes, things definitely seem to change, because maybe retirement or leaving a sport at a younger age in comparison to what they would have in the past didn't necessarily mean the end of the world, or people like that kind of, they weren't in that free fall mode where they couldn't think of the positive outcomes. They could only think, oh my God, where is this going to lead me to? I think that that it has improved, but it's quite tough when you look at it in a competitive fashion, because, you know, people are there to try and get a position at the end of the day. Some people are there for different reasons. Some people are there because it means a scholarship for college. Some people are there because they love the sport, their lives are the sport, they want that sport to be their lives for the foreseeable future. But there is at least that safety net there for most of them now, that at least they have, may normally have a college degree, or at least some kind of qualification coming out of it now. But I think still, definitely in Ireland, because I've been to other countries and I've seen it, and I do think that the safety net for people's mental health is much better in other countries. And sometimes I think we have this tendency to play a little bit second fiddle in Ireland, because we have this "it'll be grand" nature to us, and we seem to kind of pod off instead of actually wrangling with these issues. Like, there's no shame in looking for mental, like, help for your mental health. There's no shame, and but that doesn't seem to have quite yet kind of engrossed itself in all sports or physical activity in our country. I think people are a little bit left on the lurch when it comes to that. And I think as much as other things in our lives play a massive role in kind of helping people. You will have people, regardless, who will find, like, they could be the happiest person in the world. They could play a couple of other sports and they could do whatever. But losing that sport that would have been what they deemed their sport, it is going to be, I think, it's still something that's quite tough for them. And I think it's, especially amongst men and young men, it's one of these things of like, oh, well, you'll just have to deal with it.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point, though, as well, because you will have, I think there is a lot of people and that, and especially young men, because there's nearly, and well, I think young women as well at the moment, I think it kind of depends. Like there is an interesting
it's definitely a change in dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it is interesting at the moment, because I think with the likes of G or with the likes of rugby, for example, even the whole situation with the women's rugby international team in the last number of years, like the black and white kind of nature of support structures and just emphasis towards a positive environment being built for them, really, like, that still shows we have a very long way to go before we can actually really make progress on that kind of thing. I think we are quite separated, even with the likes of the underage kind of situations, like the difference between camogie and the difference between Gaelic football or whatever, and hurling. Like, I think there is, it's very interesting, different sports are going to have their own ways of doing things, but I do think we still have a lot of work to do when it comes to that. You're dead right. There's a lot of grind to be done. Well, I'm going to leave you to it for the moment. Where could people get in touch with you, dude?
For me, they can get onto any of my social media handles. They're all onfeeneyat. And I also have a website at www.onfeeneyat.ie.
Nice. Excellent. So, Owen, I'm going to leave a final bit of advice from yourself to anybody who's listening, about any particular issues that they're having or injuries or anything like that. Do you have any kind of advice for somebody who will imagine going through some injury stuff at the moment, and might be feeling a little bit under pressure and they're like, look, I'm not getting as far or whatever. Have you any particular advice for those kind of people to finish it all off?
I think for people who maybe kind of almost feel like they're stuck in the rehab, I think the best thing to kind of realize is that your therapist or whoever is helping you will see that massive progress in you, whereas patients tend to not see that massive progress. They kind of see things in large increments, whereas I'm drilled and built to see things in degrees and centimeters when it comes to improvements for people's health. And I think maybe taking a step back and just sort of seeing where you were at the beginning of your injury to where you are now, and kind of seeing and trying to implement new things or different plans. Like rehab is a very changeable thing. It's very almost like elastic in nature. You should be able to try new things, not just try and rehash the same kind of process over and over again and explain and expect different outcomes. So don't be afraid to try new things. Don't be afraid to seek advice where you deem it necessary. If you feel like things aren't changing or not going at the pace that you are comfortable with, talk to your therapist. They're there for you. They're not there to be, they're at times there to be your drill sergeant, but they're also there as a safety net for you. If you ever need help, just talk to them and try and change things up. There is no set rehab. There is no such thing as one plan or one size fits all. When it comes to that kind of thing, just be confident that there's always a solution and there's always a way to work around things.
Awesome. Thank you. Super. Thanks a million for joining me on. It's a pleasure to have a chance to chat to you. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Good stuff, dude. And I'll put those details in the show notes, so hopefully people will be able to get in touch with you and get sorted, and you'll be able to sort them out and get them back on the road to recovery. So thanks again, Owen, and I'll leave you to it. See you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 49 of the Humble Coach Podcast. As always, massive appreciation for everybody's support for the podcast. I want to say a massive thanks to everyone who has followed us up until this point, and looking forward to episode number 50 very, very soon. If you'd like to check out any of the other episodes, you can check us out on wherever you normally get your podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean. Now that iTunes is gone, it'll be Apple Music or Apple Podcasts. It is still there, Spotify, etc. So you can check us out there. And if you would like to have anybody in particular, get me to have anybody in particular on the show, just shoot me a message and we can get it sorted. But in the meantime, I hope you guys enjoyed the show, and I'll chat to you guys very soon. Have a fantastic day. Thanks, folks.